talk about.
Okay, the first Aliyah of Parshas Mishpatim is itself an introduction to the whole theme of Mishpatim, which gives the Parsha its title. And Mishpatim is a very significant concept, a very crucial idea, the notion that we have a Torah that is made up of different kinds of values and different kinds of rules, some of which we call chukim, and some of which we call mishpatim, even though there's not really an absolute division between the two. That we understand that chukim, we use that to refer to halachos such as, for example, basar b'chalav, where we don't seem to understand what they're about. They seem to defy rational explanation. And mishpatim is what we use to refer to, it's also known as mitzvos sichlios, the mitzvos that we feel, we do think we understand, that we can relate to more intellectually. Even though, as we'll mention, there's no real absolute distinction, because we assume that the chukim also have explanations, and we don't excuse ourselves from trying to figure them out. As we've been doing this man, we've spent some significant time trying to understand what Basar B'chalav is about. So even though we certainly put it in the chol category, we nonetheless work with trying to figure out how to approach it. And Mishpatim also, even though we think we do get it, but the assumption is that there is still an element that is beyond us. And that could be what Rashi is getting at, that there is a very difficult idea in Rashi over here. This is Rashi in the very beginning of the parsha, because the pasuk says, Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tosim lefneihem. These are the mishpatim that you shall place in front of them. So this idea of placing it in front of them, asher tosim lefneihem, so Rashi says, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so God says to Moshe, lo sal al daitcha, you shouldn't think, loimar eshne lehem haperek, v'halacha bezo gimel pamim, I'll just teach them this idea two or three times, ad shetehei sudur b'fiyem k'mishnas, until they know enough about it, v'eini matriach atzmi lehavinam tameh hadavar perusho. And I'm not going to push myself to make sure that they understand the reasonings and the explanations. Therefore, the Torah emphasizes that you shall place in front of them, you should set it up like a set table. Hey, that sounds like a great way to describe a very specific halachic code. That is ready for a person to eat from. So, what's going on here? Why is this necessary? Moshe was looking to go on strike. Moshe wasn't interested in working anymore. Eini matriach asatzmi. What's pshat? So the Rashi of Karen Biav and the Rav Goldwicht explain that this goes to this whole issue of the chukim mishpatim divide. That when it comes to mishpatim, so there is the concern that it may seem too understandable, too accessible. That because the risk is that one might think, oh, I get this. This is all civil law. We could figure this out on our own. And there isn't really any religious content here. And to that extent, it's necessary to convey that this is no different than the rest of the Torah. So Moshe was afraid that perhaps one might get the impression that this is just all logic. And he wanted to preserve the mystery a little bit. But Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him not only is that not correct, but here is where you more have to explain what's going on. Here is where you have to go into the reasoning all the more so. And this is an issue. I don't remember if we've had an opportunity to talk about this year at all. Maybe we have, I don't recall. But there is a comment of the Rambam in the Shmona Prakim, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, where he addresses the statement of Chazal, and Chazal have in a few places the idea that there's no value, there's no need for a person to say, oh, yefshi v'basr chazer, I have no interest in non-kosher food. That it's perfectly fine for a person to say, yefshi v'afshi, that I have great interest in this non-kosher food. But what am I going to do? Gezeiras HaMelech, God said not to, so I'm going to stay away. So that idea, says the Rambam, that it doesn't matter whether or not you connect to the mitzvah internally, says the Rambam, it's not true about everything. He says that's only true about the chukim, about what you would call the mitzvos shimios, the mitzvos that we observe out of obedience only. But the mitzvah that we could appreciate intellectually, so then, all the more so, one is obligated to try to understand what they're about and to try to appreciate what their meaning is, because we have a greater possibility of accessing the Chochmas HaBori in this case. It's davka through the Mishpatim that we are able to understand God's wisdom even more so. So not only should you not hold back Moshe Rabbeinu here in this context, but all the more so, here is where you're supposed to explain what's going on. Maybe this is Pshat also, there's a story that's quoted in some Sfarim that Chafetz Chaim, he was selling his farm, so he was approached by a businessman who came to him and said, I want to buy all of your farm, with the exception of one. He says, I don't want to buy the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. So Chafetz Chaim's a little offended. He said, you know, this is the one I'm named after. What's Pshat? So the man said that he wrote a lot of nice books here. So he wrote the Mishnah Berurah, the laws of prayer and tefillin and Shabbos. I'll be able to observe those laws. He wrote books about korbanos. It's not going to cause me any problems. He wrote a book saying I shouldn't talk in a nasty way about people. I'm out there in the dog-eat-dog world of business. There's no way I'm going to be able to observe these principles. And the Chafetz Chaim, not so surprisingly, didn't accept this excuse. And he quoted from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who had apparently said that this book, Chafetz Chaim, is so important, said it'd be worthwhile if all that came out of this book is that one Jew should read it and what? Change his behavior? No, one Jew should read it and sigh, meaning that he would say, oh, if only I could follow these rules, but I can't. Oh, well, moving on. That would be enough. Which is interesting, because that's not normally the halachic attitude, or not always the halachic attitude, at least.
Is there any other instance where there's any kind of parallel?
Well, we seem to find the opposite, because the Gemara does say, at least sometimes, that we have a principle of Mutav shushogin v'alhu mizidin, that if you know that someone's not going to follow the din, so at least in some circumstances, better not to tell them about the din in the first place. Because if he's not going to do it either way, then he'll be worse off if he knows he'll be amazed rather than a shogeg. So why is it so clear here to Rabbi Yisrael that better the person should know the halachas of Lashon Hara even if he's not going to keep them? They'll be amazed rather than a shogeg. So maybe based on this Rambam, we could draw a distinction between the chukim and the mishpatim. That when it comes to the chukim, so then, okay, so if you don't know the din, you're better off if you're not following it anyway because you're a shogeg. But when it comes to the mishpatim, So there's a greater possibility it's going to have an impact on you as far as your spirituality, because you can relate to the principles. So even if you're not following the rules, but there's an impact that could happen nonetheless, and it's worth learning for that reason. And similarly, the Nitziv writes in his commentary to Chumash that even though we normally have a prohibition of Baal Tosif, that we're not allowed to extrapolate and think we can add on to a mitzvah, but when it comes to the Mishpatim, we would be reasonable in assuming that we understand where it's going, and we do take it further. And in this spirit, Rabbeinu Yonah actually understands that the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says, Havi Mesunim Bedin, so that first Mishnah gives us that message. We normally understand Havi Mesunim Bedin, we normally translate that to mean that one should think carefully about matters of din. We should be careful and make sure we have the right ruling. But Rabbeinu Yonah had an extra explanation. He says, if you want to understand the Chochmas Habore, you want to access the Kadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom, so a good place to focus would be in matters of din, because that's where you have the greatest potential. You could understand more of what's going on, so it's wise to be Mesunim B'din. And of course, there's one of the three possibilities. The Gemara says, if a person wants to be a chassid, so he should learn the Milei D'Nezikin. He should learn the words of Parsha Mishpatim, essentially, which talk about the rules of Nezikin. That's what gives a person an extra zihirus in how they treat other people's property. And the Gemara in Bava Basra also says what gives a person extra chachma is to learn this area of Torah. So there's a lot of extra points. We believe in Talmud Torah everywhere. We believe Kol Torah Kula is valuable, but it's just interesting to note that we have a couple of extra milas to learning the themes in Parshas Mishpatim. They can be advocated for a number of reasons. Also interesting, while we're mentioning this first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, so that idea of having Mesunim B'din in its more literal application, so the Gemara actually says that the mucker for the idea of having Mesunim B'din is the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin, and the Avzayin and Mibbeis, the Gemara says you learn that from the Smichas HaParshias, from the juxtaposition of the end of last week's Parsha and Parshas Yisro and the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, because here we talk about Asher Tosim Lifnehem, and in the end of last week's Parsha we have the din of Lo Saleh B'malo Sal Mizbechi, that we shouldn't go up and stairs on the Mizbeach, which has a imagery of not walking proudly. And here we're told to explain things carefully. So all of that conveys that we should be careful in matters of din. And there this halacha is learnt out. It's also interesting for a third reference to that first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which also connects to this introduction to the theme of Mishpatim. So the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the very first words, are Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai, Masar Yeshua, etc. So that's good to know that Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai and transmitted it. If you're going to learn Mishnayos, that's very important knowledge. But why is that the beginning of Pirkei Avos? That which should be the first Mishnah in Brachos. That should be right after the Daf Yomi Siyam. We should start again with that. Why wait until Pirkei Avos is way more than halfway through? So why is that the place for this idea? And the Meiri and the Bartanur, they comment that the notion is that when it comes to tefillin or sukkah or shofar or tzitzis, so then you know you're learning about something religious. And you don't need to be reminded that this is from Sinai. But if you're going to have a mesechta like Pirkei Avos, which tells you things like smile a lot, right? That's the mission in Pirkei Avos. Or don't embarrass people, or be careful with your friend's kavod. So what might you think you're dealing with? You might get the impression that what you have there is essentially how to win friends and influence people as taught by the rabbis. Good advice from the sages. That's what it sounds like. So we need to emphasize that this is also Torah Misinai, that no less than the rest of the Mishnayos and Shas, Pirkei Avos is also from Sinai. And that's essentially what we find in the very beginning of the Parsha here, the Rashi before the one we're talking about, that Mari Shonim Misinai, Fe'elu Misinai, that this Mishpatim, these are just as much from Sinai as anything else. When I was a kid, I used to collect commentaries on Pirkei Avos. I remember I was very excited to get the commentary of the Vilna Gaon on Pirkei Avos. I thought it'd be razzle-dazzle Divrei Torah. And it turned out that it wasn't so exciting, I thought, because the commentary, all he did was he quoted Gemaras and didn't really say so much in terms of razzle-dazzle Divrei Torah, and I was too young to appreciate that that was actually a very deep contribution, that the whole Sefer was a thesis, that essentially the Gaon was explaining that what does the word Avos mean in Pirkei Avos? So in all the English translations, it's Ethics of the Fathers, Chapters of the Fathers, but we know that Avos means also Avos Nezikin, Avos Malachos, of a satuma, so the general categories. So what makes them avos? So Rashi, in the beginning of Avakama, we learned last year, Rashi understands that avos kari lahanach diksivim bekra. That, again, this is the rest of this week's parsha, that we learn the avos nezikin and parshas mishpatim. Right? So where are the avos nezikin from? They're from parshas mishpatim. So the Vilna Gaon understood that Pirkei Avos also, everything that's in Pirkei Avos is ultimately from the Chumash. Now you just have to know where to look. So he was quoting the Gemaras that Darshan, the Psukim, that explained how all of the Masechta comes out of the Chumash, the Torah Shebichtav. It's a fascinating project. And that whole idea that you can look into the Chumash and find all these notions. So that's one meaning of Pirkei Avos. And also, like we said before, Rehavi Misuna Bedin, the idea that Pirkei Avos, these are really principles for everything else. So they are Avos, like Avos Nezikin and Avos Malachos, that everything inside the Sefer is or Avos. So this is all this idea that the Mishpatim are co-equal with the Chukim, and with the other half of the Torah, and that they are vital themes, that we have to observe these mitzvos and to appreciate the themes, and at the same time recognize that they have a mitzvah quality that is beyond us. I remember I was once listening many years ago to a shir from Rav Shlomo Fischer Shlita, the author of the Sefer Beis Yishai. He's a tremendous Gaon. And he was discussing the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban in Parshas Vayishlach that discusses the mitzvah of din for Bnei Noach. So the Ramban, in his commentary to Vayishlach, has a very big chiddush where he says that the mitzvah of din is the one positive mitzvah that applies to all of humanity. The one of the Shavim mitzvahs of Bnei Noach, only one of them is a positive mitzvah, and that's the mitzvah of din. So the Ramban says, what does that mean? It means that all of the rules that we have for civil law, all of the mishpatim, actually apply to all of humanity. They don't just apply to Jews, they apply to everyone. So there's a big chiddush. So to emphasize the big chiddush, if Shlomo Fischer commented, says, and don't say that, well, of course they do because they're all logical and rational anyway, so they should apply it to all of humanity because of that. He said, don't think that. He says, there are more Gezeres Shavos and Kal Vachomers and Bav Metzia than there are in Parah Aduma. I mean, there's more Chidushim and Halacha Moshe Misinais and Midrash HaTorah Nidrashes Behem in these areas that you may think that you can figure everything out. And there's a lot that's very far from obvious. But nonetheless, we're supposed to try to still appreciate and understand what there is that is accessible about these concepts. And when it comes, there's a whole discussion when it comes to Kibbud Av V'Em. So the Meshech Chachma and his commentary to Chumash and the Aruch HaShulchan, they have similar comments, slightly different from each other, but similar, where they say that kibud av v'em is something which is very rational. The whole world has a notion of respecting your elders, of hakar satov, and respecting your parents. But nonetheless, we're supposed to relate to it as a mitzvah, as a tzivui. So even if you're not convinced by the svara, you still do it as a commandment. So some understood that means that you shouldn't be thinking of the rational component, you should be thinking of only the fact that it's a mitzvah. That's very hard to say that that's really the case. And Reb Zalman Chaim Goldberg, a few years ago, already published a sefer of his shiurim on Tamei HaMitzvos, where he discusses this, and he says it's very hard to believe that that's really even what they meant. He says, presumably what they mean is that even if the svara doesn't speak to you, you still have to keep the mitzvah as a mitzvah. But certainly, when the svara is clear to us what the svara is about, so then for sure we're supposed to try to connect to that as a part of our kiyum mitzvah. And especially because we have a notion of lifnim mishur sadin and v'asiso yoshev atov, so that requires us to try to understand what the value within each mitzvah is, so that we can know how to go above and beyond. That's a practical ramification of trying to understand what the mitzvah is, because the chiyuv of v'asiso yoshev atov, of requiring us to go above and beyond the demands of the mitzvah sometimes, that's going to require us to understand what the mitzvah is about, so that we'll know how to go above and beyond. So all of that is part of Moshe's mission here. So you can't take a break. You have to make sure to convey everything carefully. So in addition to that, Asher Tosim Lefnehem, so there are at least two major halachic concepts that emerge from Asher Tosim Lefnehem. So one of them is, and they're both, that lifnehem is to exclude something. So what does it mean, lifnehem? So lifnehem means Jewish judges who are smuchim. So that is excluding two categories. One is excluding non-smuchim. So in order to have a functioning bezdin, you really need to have dayanim who are ordained. So you might think, okay, excellent, so we have a Chag HaSmicha coming up here in a month, so we're going to add to that pool. So unfortunately, not exactly, we don't want to put a damper on that, it is a tremendous event, I don't want to take away from that at all, you all should be very excited about the upcoming Chag HaSmicha, but it's not exactly the same, but nowadays we don't have Smicha in this sense, that the Smicha that we're talking about here needed to be Ish Mipi Ish, from Moshe Rabbeinu. And that chain has been broken. So we don't have Dayanam Smuchim nowadays. What we have nowadays is a different kind of smicha for a different purpose, the Netilos Rishus, perhaps, from our Rebbeim, to make sure that we know how to get the message across without garbling the point. But the notion of Dayanam Smuchim we don't have nowadays. So really, we can't have all of the Dine Mamanus, as the Torah describes, carried out. We have, in fact, this prohibition. So what do we do? So why do we have any Bezdin system at all nowadays? Which we certainly do, and it's going to address the other issue, the other exclusion here that we'll mention in a second. So the Gemara says that nowadays, because we need to have some kind of system to regulate monetary issues, so we have a concept of shlichu sayhu, which sounds like it means that the non-ordained dayanim that we have nowadays are working on shlichus from the earlier, no longer around ordained dayanim. Chassam Sofer and others, Rishon already explained, or Shechter has asked about this, that it doesn't really mean shlichus, it's something else, it's some kind of a mechila that is permitted, that we're not stepping on the toes of the ordained dayanim, but it's limited. So essentially, we're worried that if we don't have any kind of a court system, so we're going to have a chaotic society. And also, we want people, for example, to be able to receive loans. If somebody is poor, so we are very concerned that there should be a possibility of assistance, people should loan them money. And no one's going to lend money if they're afraid the other party is going to default and there's not going to be any recourse. There's no courts. We don't want there should be a tinol delos b'fnei lovin. We don't want people to have no options to get loans because everyone's afraid they're not going to get any help if there's going to be a default or other such issues. So we have this concept of a authorized non-salmach court. So the Bate Din, nowadays, they are able to work under that understanding. And there's two limitations. So there's two rules as to what they're able to adjudicate. They can't adjudicate everything. They can only deal with matters that are relatively common, the Davar HaShchiach, and it's a whole discussion what is in that category and what isn't. That's a little subtle. And the other thing is, it's got to be mamon, as opposed to knas. So what's the basic definition of mamon and knas? That mamon is something where you're paying for something directly in proportion to what it is. So if I borrow money from you, I have to pay back that money. If I steal from you, I got to pay back what I stole. If I broke something, I got to pay for the value. If I hired a worker, I have to pay the worker. There you have things that directly correlate to actual monetary impact. While a knas is something which is on top of that and doesn't necessarily have a real-world correlation. So kefel is a knas. So nowadays, if somebody gets caught with stolen property, they don't pay kefel because we don't adjudicate knossos nowadays because you need a samuch for that. And you don't have any of the onshin of what the Torah describes. Theoretically, a Bezdin can impose their own onshin in order to keep society in line, but the onshin and the knossos that are described in the Torah, so that we don't have, because we need a batei din of smuchim in order to be able to impose that. So that's one of the issues here, that you need to put your litigations lifneihem v'lo lifnei hajotas, and the Ramban understands that if you're not putting them in front of qualified dayanim, so then you're not going to have the siyata d'shmaya that you need to have, that the notion that there is a special divine assistance that comes with paskening in the proper way. So that requires that everything be done in the proper way, and that's not going to be present, the Ramban says, without this. It's interesting, while we already made a few references to the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, so I guess let's continue that. But there is an interesting comment of Nosson Gestetner in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, and his Laharus Nosson to Pirkei Avos. He notes that first Mishnah, which, as we said, tells the whole transmission of the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, and then says it ended up with Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and Heim Amru Shlosha Dvarim, they said three things. Like we said, having the Sunnah Bedin, and also before that, Siyag LaTorah, as we've been talking about in this parak, and Hamidu Talmidim Harbeish, set up many Talmidim. So Gestetner explains what's the connection between those three pieces of instruction and the whole description of the Masorah. So he gives an anachronistic example that Rav Shechter has mentioned on occasion also, that the Chassam Sofer had a derech of psak which seemed a little bit impressionistic, or like intuitive, that he would kind of answer very quickly and then bring the rayas later. And the story is related that his son, the Ksav Sofer, said to him, you know, why do you answer so quickly? You're writing to Talmidei Chachamim, you should take a little more time. And he responded that he feels that it's got to be a certain siyata d'shmaya that's coming to him, because the whole world comes to him with a shilas, so he is where the Masorah is coming through. So therefore, it must be that there's a special siyata d'shmaya that he's going to not mess up the halacha. And just to back up the story, my friend Rabbi Gideon Rothstein told me he recently did a statistical study of tshuvas and of what comes up more often in citations than others. I think he discovered that Chassam Sofer comes up most often in terms of what's being cited by other tshuvas. So it's taka the case. You see that the Misori was running through the tshuvas and so forth. So anachronistically, Gestetner puts that back into this Mishnah, and he says that once upon a time, so we have a clear address for the Misori. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Misori. So there's a certain siyata d'shmaya that the halacha will be protected. But in later generations, so it's been diffused, that we don't know anymore what the address is for the Masorah. We don't know who to turn to and say, okay, here's where the Masorah lives. So we have to rely more on chachma, on wisdom, to make sure you get it right. So in the later generations, all the more so, so then we have these pieces of instruction that we have to, first of all, make safeguards, because we could make more mistakes, so it's Yusyag L'Torah, and we have to set up many Talmidim, because we have to try to build as large of a foundation as we can, and we have to think more carefully, and have Misunim B'din, because we are less confident that we know exactly where the Masorah is located. So all of that is a part of this idea. The Gemara in Erevin and Daf and Dalet and Mebeis, the Gemara says that Shatosnufnei means the Rav has to, the teacher has to explain very carefully to the Talmidim the ideas, and he has to be Ma'arponim to them. It's all a part of this idea. But the other notion that's derived, the other prohibition that's derived from this pasuk, is that Asher Tosnufnehem V'lolufnei Ovdei Kochavim, that there's a prohibition that the Gemara has a number of places, the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Peches, and elsewhere, that there is a prohibition not to bring one's litigation in front of, we call our kos, in front of the non-Jewish courts. And this is a serious prohibition, applies b'zman hazeh also. It's a little more subtle than we may appreciate, because there's some surprising details to it. So we find that there's some very strong language that's brought down in reference to one who would do this, and it's considered to be a chil Hashem for one to bring his litigation to the Arkosehem, to the civil courts. So you might think, yeah, it's a chil Hashem because kind of airing your dirty laundry in public for two Jews who are fighting to go in front of the secular authorities and let them see that. That's a chil Hashem. But that's also true, but there's a different idea here. It's not the chil Hashem only in that sense, but it's a chil Hashem in that you're basically saying, I believe, that the Torah is not enough for you, that the Torah is nice for some things, but when it comes to something that's really important, when it comes to your money, so that's what you have to turn to the secular law for. The Torah is good enough to tell you what to eat, maybe, and how to dress, maybe, but not as far as how your money is allotted. That's too serious for the Torah. So that's considered to be a chil Hashem. And that's a prohibition. But it's interesting that it's, despite that, it's not really only about the system, because even if you were to know that the non-Jewish court would follow the same process as the Din Torah, there's still a prohibition to go to them. And fakert, you can go to a Beis Din, even if the Beis Din is going to make a condition that they're going to go based on secular law. So, for example, nowadays, sometimes the condition is that the case will be adjudicated al pi dina de malchusa. So maybe it'll be judged based on New York state law. Still, you go to a Beis Din in order for that. So it's an interesting, perhaps surprising application that it's not about the rules themselves. It's about the body. And the Bad Kodesh, Baruch Pavarsky, explains that even though the rules might be the same, it's because we want to be Mekadishim Shemayim, so we want that it should go through the halachic authorities. And he mentions the story that Gemara says about Reb Shimon ben Shetach, who wanted to be Mekadishim Shemayim and returning property that he maybe wouldn't otherwise have had to. And he says there that he wants to get the reaction of Baruch Elokei Shimon ben Shetach, that they should praise the God of Shimon ben Shetach. So that's essentially the idea here as well. So that's the notion. It's also interesting that this doesn't apply to arbitration. So if one needs to go to arbitration, so that you could do in front of non-Jews, but specifically as far as Din is concerned, that's where you have this prohibition. And this is essentially an avera, really both ben adam l'chavero and ben adam l'makom. Because ben adam l'chavero, because it involves potential gezel, because if somebody takes another Jew to Arkos and he wins more money than he would have otherwise in Bezdin, so that's considered to be gezel. So that's an avera ben adam l'chavero. And even if the other guy is okay with it, so it's still a ben adam l'makom, it's still an offense against God. And it's a significant issue, which the whole discussion of what is included in this, the Ramah and his Shuvas understands that it can't be made either in secular court, because that's Misayaya, you're participating in the Avera. And the Sefer Shara Mishpat, he disagreed with this, he said that's not necessarily the case, because it's not going to make the Avera any worse if you're testifying. And if the truth is going to have a harder time coming out because you're refusing to testify, so then you're going to be in violation of L'Samar al-Dam Re'acha. So that's a whole discussion. The Shuvas Be'er Sarim is a contemporary sefer of Avraham Yaffe's Leshen. There's a whole discussion about this where he says, no, you can't participate at all. You can't be a lawyer with two Jews in the civil court. It's an extensive discussion. It's an issue that comes up all the time. So we have to be very careful to make sure that the notion of Bezdin is something that's respected. It's hard nowadays sometimes to make sure that there's a proper respect for Bezdin, both in terms of how the Bat Din are perceived and what people feel about Bezdin. So it's important from both sides of the equation to make sure that we have Bat Din that are respected, and that we have people able to appreciate the need for Bezdin and to understand what's involved here and to make that the place where we turn to if Chalila we should ever be in a fight. We should try to avoid fights in the first place. But if we ever have a machlokas, we should know that that's what the obligation is. The Lutzkarov, this Naim Latorah, points out that this whole parsha of Mishpatim is here right between Yisro and Truma in order to emphasize that before we get involved in the Mishkan, so we want to emphasize that everything's got to be kasher v'yasher, all of our money has to be kedas v'kedin, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is no soni gezel ba'ola, that he's not going to accept any gezel in the process of the karbonos. So therefore we have this parsha here in between. Okay, so we spent a good chunk of time on the first pasuk. Let's try to get a little bit of comments in the time that we have on some of the other psukim. So we know we started right away talking about avadin, which is a little hard for us to relate to b'zman hazeh. It's not a theme that is a part of our lives nowadays. But the notion of starting with avadin, right? Second pasuk begins, Ki sikne eved ivri, sheishanem yavo, rivashviyas yeti l'cha shichinam, that if a person has an eved ivri, so then he only works for 6 years, and the seventh year, he shall be set free for nothing. So starting off with avadim, again, talk to the Litzker Rav, there's Naim Matara, he says that you might think that to be told to have rachmanas for an eved, this is the last thing we need to hear, right? We just got out of Egypt. We just were released from slavery. So, of course, we get it. We get the idea that we need to be merciful towards the slaves. So why is this a priority here? So he says it's actually the opposite. He says that the teva of man, the human nature, is that when he's suffering, so he's very idealistic, he would never do this to anyone else, he's able to see things like that. But then as soon as the situation changes, he can turn on a dime and he can forget what it was like. And my father, he used to talk about what he called the EKY syndrome, it's Eved Ki Imloch, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, that you have an Eved who then becomes a king, who becomes a shtickle authority, so he becomes very authoritative and he forgets what it was like to be in that position of subservience, and Taka need to be reminded that you have to be compassionate. Okay, and Bagapo Yovo, Bagapo Yetze, and Bal Yishahu Vyotzi Yishto Imo. So if he came in by himself, he goes out by himself. And if he's given a wife in the context of his avdus, so then he should go out with her. As Rashi explains, I'm going to cost you a kone Eved Ivri Chayiv Mizonis Yishtuvanov, that the one who acquires the Eved Ivri is obligated to support also his wife and his children. And as the Ramban emphasizes, that the Torah has Rachmanis on the family, that they shouldn't lose their support just because of the situation of Avdus. Okay, but what happens if he says that he's not interested in going, he wants to stay there? So, skip ahead a little bit. So the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Vav, that he's brought to Vigisho Adonav El Elohim. So what does that mean? This is a chol here, this is not Kodesh. He's brought to the Bezdin, to the same Bezdin that sold him in the first place, Vigisho Adela, sold him a Zuzo, Varatza Adonav, Es Oznov, Matseya, Vavod Oli Olam. So he has his ear pierced, and he becomes an Eved permanently. So why his ear? So the Gemara says that Gemara Kedusha and Daf Chabez and Beis is this ear that heard the Torah's commandment and was able to ignore it. So what did he hear? So it sounds like he heard Lo Signov. So the Taz and Choshe Mishpat comments, but Lo Signov and Sarasa Dibros is actually talking about Gonev Nefashos, also talking about kidnapping. You know, the assumption here sounds like he heard that he shouldn't steal, the assumption being that he became an Eved Ivri because he was stealing and he couldn't pay back. But Lo Signov Nesar Sedibros, doesn't that mean Gonev Nefashos, the kidnapper? So some understand that, yeah, it means that that's referring to him also, that he caused himself to be put into a custodial state. Also, the Sanderach comments that the Asaras HaDibros are really all fundamental principles, so it's all included. We also have a text that it refers to the idea of Ali b'nei Yisrael avadim, v'lo avadim l'avadim. That's how Chazal adds to it, the pasuk of Ali b'nei Yisrael avadim, that we are supposed to be avadim to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and not to be avadim to anyone else, not to be avadim to human beings. Okay, so then the next pasuk tells us, "V'chiyim karish as bito la'ama, lo seitzeh kiseis avadim." So when a man should sell his daughter as an ama, so here we find that this notion is one that is very extreme. Chazal saying the Gemara in Kedusha and Daf Chaf that somebody would only do this if he was extremely desperate, and that there was no other way to support his daughter. And Utskarov comments that's why it says Ish as opposed to Av, because this is not a fatherly thing to do. This is not something that somebody would do except in the most extreme circumstances. It says so nonetheless, but we just saw from the previous pasuk that if somebody himself goes into slavery, so then the master is going to have to support the whole family anyway. So maybe it's a better aid, so he should sell himself into slavery rather than sell his daughter. And Mavela will still be supported. So he explains that his guy is hoping that if he stays free, so maybe he'll be able to be po to her, which is more likely than him being in that position, and then they may be stuck. Okay. So let's skip around a little bit more because we'll try to get a little more in the time that we have. So let's go to Pasuk Yudalid for a second. So Chiyazir Yishareyu Lahargo Barma Mi'im Izbechi Tikachan Olamos. So if a person intentionally plots to kill somebody else, so then he is taken to be executed, even if he is a Kohen and he wants to do the Avod, even Mayim Mizbechi. this idea of ki azid, so Chazal understand, you know, it's got to be amazed. This is one of the sources for the notion of hasra, the idea that a person is only executed, is only given the punishment from Beis Din if he's been properly warned. And that, as the Gemara says, at least according to one opinion, the purpose of hasra is lahavchin ben shogeg amezid, in order to ascertain that the person really is an intentional sinner. But we find that it's much more than just ascertaining that you know what you're talking about, because the standard for hasra is you have to have the two edim issue a very clear warning with the consequences, and the defendant has to accept the hasra, and he has to commit the avera within toch kidei dibur. It's a very short period of time. It's somewhere between 3 and 9 seconds. And if more than that elapses, so then we're concerned that he forgot. Which seems very unlikely. So Sachoshin had a very hard time with this. And really, that if a person lets 30 seconds pass, so then he forgot. So Rav Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, there's a whole essay about this in the introduction to one of his svarim. And Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as having explained that the idea of hasra, it's not just that we want to know, are you aware of this avera, are you amazed in that sense, but in order to execute somebody, so we need to know that they're really a super amazed, that they are amazed to the point that they're not only aware that they could access the information, but that they have it in their active consciousness when they are doing the avera. And as he expressed it, we're trying to ascertain ad heichan hu parek ol, how far is this person going in his rebelliousness? Is he ready to do the avera under these circumstances where he is actively thinking of just how bad it is? It's only that level of incorrigibility that a person is really chayv misa for, which is a big discussion. The next pasuk, you should be familiar with, Ma'ke Aviv Imamos Yumas, so a person's chayv misa for hitting his father. So we know from last month that that is one of the makaros for rov, right? The idea that we rely on a rov. So the Gemara in the first parak of Chulin says, how do you know that? Because of dinim like this, because you can only be chayv misa if a person actually can be verified to be your father. And how exactly does that happen? How are we going to know whose father is who? We know whose mother is who, because we can see who's giving birth to who, but how do we know who the father is? So we have a rov, in this case it's really a chazaka, Aruba Delesa Kaman, of rov Bilas Achar Abal, that most people are children of their mother's husbands. So we rely on that rov, even for dinim nefashos. So that's one of the dinim that is derived from rov. So we'll have to skip to the end here to make sure to get a little more in here before we run out of time. But towards the end of the Aliyah, so we talk about hurting someone, and we talk about the idea of v'rapo yirape. So the notion of v'rapo yirape, the Gemara of Avakama, Daf Peches, the Gemara in the beginning of Achogel, the Gemara understands that what is v'rapo yirape coming to tell you? That mikan sheyesh rishos l'rofe l'rapos. That there is permission given for the doctor to heal. So that's a difficult idea, because we know that not only is the doctor permitted to heal, but there's actually a chiyuv for the doctor to heal. That there's a mitzvah of hashiv osolo, that it's included in the broader idea of hashavas aveda, that if we're going to return somebody's lost property, so kal v'chomer, we certainly want to help them out in the matter of their health, which is more important than their lost property. And it's a question, how are doctors able to get paid and the like, because they're involved, sorry, you still have time to reconsider, how are doctors able to get paid if they're doing a mitzvah? So we assume that not only are they permitted to heal, but they're obligated to heal. So what does it mean here to say that there is Rishus, Lerofe, Lerapos? So there are at least two basic approaches to this idea. One is Hashkafic, and one is legal. So the Hashkafic approach still seems indicated from the fact that we say there's a chiyuv, but okay, nonetheless, is that you might say, if God made this guy sick, so who am I to intervene? Who am I to try to contradict God's will? So we don't assume like that. We assume that somehow this is how Kodesh Baruch Hu set up the world, that he created problems for people, and he gave us the obligation of chesed to try to do what we can to help people. And we don't say that we are thwarting his will. So even though it may seem very appealing to say I shouldn't give any tzedakah because if this guy is poor, that's the way he's meant to be, that's not how we understand it. We understand that we're doing a big mitzvah in helping people out financially. And you're doing a big mitzvah in helping people out physically if you're able to bring a refuah to somebody. So clearly that's a big mitzvah as well. And the other perspective is from a more legal angle, that there is a risk involved that when somebody, especially let's say somebody's going to be a surgeon, so in order to... You're really wondering how this affects your plans. So if somebody's going to be a surgeon, so in order to heal somebody, they have to cut them first. So it's a big leap to understand that that's something that's okay, because normally to cut somebody is an act of chavala. So what right do you have to cut a person up? So the idea that you can take an aggressive action to somebody, and one that carries a risk to it, and one that could end up doing harm. So first of all, there are all kinds of parameters to that. You have to be qualified, and you have to know what you're doing, and you have to be a mumcha, etc. But once all of that is in place, so then the understanding is that you're justified in doing so despite all of those factors. So you need a heter for that because of the otherwise problematic aspects of what's involved. And it's interesting, the Ibn Ezra has a comment here, which is not accepted la halacha, but it maybe reflects this issue, that he makes a distinction between, certainly not nowadays, but even, I don't know if it was ever accepted la halacha, makes a distinction between external problems and internal problems. There's only a heter to deal with things that you can see on the outside. So presumably, the logic of it is something related to this, that there needs to be a certain threshold of how you know what you're doing. Again, that distinction is not really relevant to us nowadays, but maybe reflects that idea that once you can assume that you have a certain amount of access and ability, so then there is a Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos. And maybe we'll just close by noting those Naim L'Torah that emphasize that the idea of Mekanshiyesh Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos, that it's to emphasize that not the opposite, that one shouldn't think that the doctor has the right to harm, either to actually physically kill someone, it's a theme of physician-assisted suicide, or the notion of emotionally causing harm by taking away somebody's hope and by telling them that there is no cure for you. So that's not their role. Understands this Naim Torah. The role is that if they can cure, so then that's their job, and otherwise, then they don't have the role. But the role is only to help and not otherwise. So that's probably a good commercial for this Sunday's medical ethics event. It's just a kind of perfect segue to leave it on that note, which is going to deal with issues such as physician-assisted suicide and the like. So I guess we will close on that commercial message. And I wish you all a very holy and mishpat-filled and appreciative Shabbos.